Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Drive Through HR. Hope everybody's having a great Monday. And Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day. So let's get into it. Got a great guest, great conversation coming. Felix, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Brian, I hope we have some fun. It's a pleasure being here.
I guarantee you we're going to have fun. That's a money back guarantee on that one.
Thank you.
And so, well, if you would introduce yourself to our family of listeners, and then we'll get into it from there.
That's a great way to get going. Felix Nader. I have a consulting firm that's called Nader Associates, and we take a holistic approach to workplace violence prevention that integrates and collaborates an organization's resources from a senior management commitment perspective, engaging leadership and employees, hopefully never to get to a dire consequential incident that results in unnecessary and unfortunate media attention to a workplace that probably was earnestly and genuinely involved in minimizing risk. I got into it about 12 years ago, following September 11th. The Postal Service on Long Island had nobody looking at the human resource security components of workplace security and safety, and they put a contract out, and I eventually was the successful bidder, and here I am doing it for almost 12 years. Prior to that, I had been a postal inspector in the New York division assigned to the division's violence interdiction team responsible for workplace violence, and I kind of hated it in the beginning because I was so used to managing resources that were entirely criminal. And then I got to discover this world of human resources, facility managers, directors of operations, union leadership, employee issues, and I just loved it. I was glad to be called back to continue on. And today, my passion, if you can hear it in my voice, is about finding root causes of contributing factors that can prevent the escalation of these incidents from an internal application of our resources so as to never, ever, ever have to answer a media-type question. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I love paying attention to what's going on in the world, and I don't profess to be the know-it-all, but I certainly have a great intuition for doing the right thing and helping my organizations avert disaster. How's that for an introduction?
It's pretty good. And you're a retired command sergeant major also. Did I read that right?
You read that right. You know, I've been blessed. For a young man that was in a boy's home to get to where I can actually say I know some pretty interesting people in my life, it's a direct attribution to those relationships and those pathways that I took along the way that opened up these wonderful opportunities that allow me to talk to you, Brian, and your wonderful audience.
Well, the timing obviously is really good. It's a year later, Boston Marathon's going on, and it's not exactly workplace, but it's obviously it's event, you know, it's an event security, you know, event awareness maybe is probably even maybe a better way to put it.
Sure.
So what are some things, and I want to kind of get back to more of the PR issue because that's the side that I think, you know, because people are overwhelmed by the emotional part. There's a practical part there, too, obviously, around brand and PR and stuff. So we'll come back to that. So what are some things today, we'll kind of do a start-stop type scenario. You know, what are some things that people can start doing today to help out on the prevention component? And what are some things that, second part of that is, what can they stop doing to make that better?
Well, great way to begin the formal piece of it. I want to challenge the thinking of all the listeners. I want to stretch their paradigm and posing a challenging gauntlet that says, if you're happy with what you're doing now, continue doing it. But if you want to change, be very, very selective. Don't go so necessarily by people's backgrounds. Verify that they have the ability to come into your workplaces and really, really help you envision and live your vision. And moving forward, understand that whatever you buy today has to be a long-term investment in a arduous and difficult and complex thing that we call workplace violence prevention. So what I am suggesting us to do is to lower your resistance, open your minds, and try to think of me as someone that's an ambassador, an ally, a partner, and not trying to sell anything, because if you never ever buy me, that's fine. What I want to do is cause you to start thinking counterintuitively and realize that what you need to do is to stop the way you're doing business with respect to preparing your workplaces for a potential homicidal incident, if you would, by preparing the workplace and the workforce properly. It's got to be a comprehensive approach. Prevention is not something where you put someone in the room and you teach them warning signs and risk factors. Prevention is an integrated and collaborative ongoing effort that involves the organization from top down, that supports the mission and the vision, and that exposes employees to the recognition of what their responsibilities are from a humanistic perspective. You can't put an adult in a room and say, these are the warning signs, because we've all been in situations where we've had a difficult financial situation, a difficult family member situation that's been ill, a divorce, a loss of children, a family court dispute. You know, these things are all not unique to us. So when adults hear, this is what you have to look for, as an adult, you tune me off, because you're not really saying to me that these are the real issues and this is how you really make a difference. You're saying that I could be a potential predator, and in fact, I never will if you really, really pay attention to me. So prevention is very, very important.
Well, that's excellent. Does it matter if you're a big company or a little company on how the blocking and tackling works on that?
Oh, boy. I tell you, the little companies are difficult to deal with because they never look at themselves as having a problem, because they consider themselves to be family and small-sized companies, and they probably have the largest challenges and more difficult situations because of that. The mid-sized companies, they really want to wrap their arms around it. They have limited resources and capabilities, but they do a real good job. I started, one of my big projects was a mid-sized firm out of Wall Street. They embraced the notion of integration and collaboration, and everybody pitched in to make a difference, and that was one of those rewarding, beneficial experiences of my life that I speak about. It was a 6-year relationship. The larger organizations are pushed back when someone like me is on the scene, because they believe they've got their skill sets in order. They believe they have everything that they want, finely tuned and working collaboratively. I beg to differ. I say it's always good to bring an outsider expert. I don't know if I'm an expert, but bring an outsider expert in that can view it from a fresh perspective and really do a critical vulnerability assessment of the practices, procedures, policies, and programs to really see if they're tied into what the vision of the organization is. Because I believe that what I do is really a function of the CEO, the executive folks in the organization, not of what I want to do. So it has to be tied into the overall human resource security mission that has to be tied directly to the organization's business plan. It is a threat to the workplace. It is a threat to financial impact. It's a threat to people, so it has to be tied in. So whether it's a small organization, a mid-sized organization, or a larger organization like some of the ones that you'll see on my profile and my CV, they all have different situations, but you got to have an open mind and bring someone in who you trust that can get the things done the way you would ultimately like to see the outcome appear to you.
Well, that's excellent, and I'm a big, especially for this specific topic, huge proponent for, you know, a qualified security consultant.
Yes.
Just because that objective, the objective look and purview of how you're approaching things is so much more accurate almost always because of the halo effect, right? You just want to trust
right.
people, and you're used to looking past the quirkiness of different things, and you're in a routine, right? You're in a pattern. It's all about patterns. And the
right.
patterns leave a lot of things exposed. So that's where you come in, and being very aware of patterns, you are very, you know, obviously observant. That's part of what you do. I think that's the part that I think is so impactful. And I think HR is, it's interesting because as you've dealt with organizations, have you seen more of this put on HR or more of this put on risk, or who owns this? Who are the stakeholders?
The prime stakeholder, and I call the proponent of the workplace violence prevention policy, is HR. And it's fine. It's fine because they really, really understand the human implication on the workplace. I get that. But they can't do it alone. You know, in most workplaces, they throw this 800-pound gorilla on the desk of the HR person who wants to be proactive, but they've got a million different other tasks on their desk. And when this report or complaint or issue is elevated to them, unless it's an urgent situation requiring the commitment of resources, you know how it works. It gets to their to-do list, and when it gets to their hot point, it gets resolved. That's why that integration and collaboration is very important, and that's my model. You know, I've been doing it even in the Postal Service, I created this model, the violence and addiction model, where we know we've got limited resources, so let's integrate and collaborate facility, all the operations people, the human resource people, everybody works together so that when HR gets a complaint or a report of an issue, they can funnel it back out to security, facilities, safety, whoever it might be, that can help them at least identify the legitimacy of the complaint so that adequate resources can be applied to remedying the situation or taking immediate corrective action.
Well, that's, you know, and that's the thing is just trying to, with the show, we always try and leave, you know, our HR friends out there around the world with a couple things, like one or two real tangible things that maybe don't cost any money at all. So it's not about budget, right?
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, it's people, and HR owns the people component with the
right.
majority of companies, whether it's implied or not.
Right.
So kind of turn this around a little bit,
yeah.
What do you typically see when it comes to like the kind of the PR, like the attack on the brand? I mean, where, you know, because companies get scrutinized probably for obvious reasons and probably legitimately so, maybe not always fairly, but when something does happen in the workplace, you know, it basically goes, you're the employer, so it goes onto the employer's shoulders to figure out what happened, how to never let it happen again, if at all possible. I mean, how do you respond with it? I mean, you go under the microscope.
Sure.
So, how do you see that all kind of typically unraveling when that happens?
It's interesting. When I got selected to be the Postal Inspector of Violence and Addiction Specialist in New York, I pushed back and I asked my boss, why did you consider me? And they peeled the onion skin layers back and they said, first of all, you are really adept at troubleshooting. Second of all, you've done all of the security law enforcement type stuff that prepares you to understand the issues. You run national organizational investigations, and guess what? You were the public information officer during the Postal Service's first ever incident in Oklahoma with Mr. Robert Sherrill, who unfortunately shot 16 employees, killed and wounded 16 before he committed suicide. So they convinced me that breadth and scope of knowledge and expertise that was looming under the skin of my career was viable. So what do I say? I say, Mr. HR, Ms. HR, the little investment that you might consider in spending $25,000, $30,000, $50,000 on someone that could really, really work with you over a period of time is inconsequential to the actual impact it has on your business. An average of 2.8 hours are spent per week dealing with conflict, and that cost raises up to about $350 billion, in expenses that affect your organization. So on the day of the incident is the wrong time to prepare to meet the media. On the day of the incident, you should really have been looking at this as an anomaly that occurred that you had full control over, and something went wrong beyond your commitment and investment that you were unaware of. So when you stand in front of the media, or your CEO stands in front of the media, or your spokesperson stands in front of the media, there is no need to appear as though you're hiding something. There is an ownership of the situation. You're fully versed on the critical elements that you were involved in, and that the event this morning was an unknown situation that your folks were on top of prior to this morning's event. So I say, do these simulation exercises that engage your organization in understanding their pieces. Look, I have a simulation exercise that if anybody who wants it on this show can email me, I'll send it to you free of charge. You could take a look at this document that talks about everyone's responsibilities and understand how the interplay piece is critical in knowing what we're supposed to be doing now. And don't wait for that dreaded day when the reporter says, so what happened? And you say, well, Felix Nader was about to be terminated. And then they find employees who say, Felix Nader was picked on for the last 2 years. He was the victim and became the bad guy because no one was listening to his situation. We're here to tell you that Felix Nader was a contributing member of the organization. Yes, he went through a terrible divorce, but the workplace was picking on him because he couldn't get to work on time. So we have to really be sensitive to the adverse impact of failure to be leaders in responding to the human dimension and not taking it as a personal responsibility to see what's going on in Felix Nader's life before we begin the disciplinary process of holding him or her accountable because they're not any longer contributing members of that organization. The most embarrassing thing, as I flip my hat around as a consultant advisor to attorneys in plaintiff matters, is when they ask the question, what do you think went wrong? And I know what went wrong is the root cause was never, ever discovered. It was just a behavior that was visible to the workforce that they focused on, but not the root cause or the contributing factors. And so I say, do not try to wrap your arms around this thing, Mr. HR or Ms. HR, all by yourselves. Don't be afraid of going out to the workplace. I have another tool called the employee survey. Let the employees annually respond to the survey, whether it's anonymously or for attribution on the record, and give you a roll-up of what you can then look at as a potential situation that might be looming under the surface that you could direct your resources. Don't wait for the day that you have an active shooter in your premises and someone says, were you prepared? And you said, no, because we never thought anything like this would happen. We have an engaged workforce. We're all committed and devoted. Baloney. Be prepared today in every aspect of this contingency, in preparing the workplace, in preparing your workforce, in dealing with the media, and having a proper, cogent, thoughtful, and honest response in the event of an incident. That's what I say we can all do, and we can do a lot better.
Do you feel that's really wrapped up just in better communication? I mean, literally, like, not, because a lot of times when you're dealing with that, the bubbling up of some of the behavioral things and people that are kind of isolationist or things are happening, just no, or mental illness, I mean, or substance abuse. Those are things that just, it's ugly and it's difficult. So I more than not, unfortunately, people just avoid it. Yeah. I mean, just are like, it's not that bad. You kind of deal with it. And so do you see a lot of times it's just potentially, it's just something that could have absolutely been at least communicated and talked about, maybe not fixed, right? Because it's the human science. You just is unpredictable. So I get that, but there was opportunities potentially that maybe weren't leveraged to foster communication that was better.
Absolutely, I think in those HR folks that can relate to this critical observation, they sit back at home and they say to themselves, why didn't Supervisor X ever take it upon themselves to display some initiative and have told somebody about this a year ago? Why didn't Manager X understand that just because we're trying to drive numbers to a level that's higher than last year's didn't mean he had to harass and intimidate the workforce into feeling as though they had to perform, otherwise they would lose their jobs? the communication or the lack of communication is a direct reasoning why negligence is a perception that drives the discomfort employees have in wanting to be collaborative, in wanting to report what they see, in wanting to be part of the solution because they see how they are being treated, and there's a system of a lack of appreciation for issues that come up, and they don't want to become the victim. So what do? Instead of reporting it to HR or security or their manager, they report their exposure and victimization outside the workplace to their priests, to the police, to their doctors, to psychologists, and the workplace never knows until there's something seriously that runs awry. So we've got to create a better model in our workplaces that holds the frontline leadership responsible for knowing what's going on, taking appropriate immediate action, correcting the situation, and if they need the resources to elevate the request for assistance. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same old Einstein quote of insanity. Definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same results.
Well, and I definitely appreciate you sharing that, because I'm actually calling from Tulsa today, and so Oklahoma. And if you can give a little more background on the incident that you referenced at the post office in Edmond, Oklahoma, back in the 80s, to let people know that the scope and like sheer gravity of what you dealt with there, to give a little background, that would be good.
It was, first of all, it was the appointment of a position that had never been a part of the Postal Inspection Service as the public information officer. Public information disclosure had always been handled by the Postal Service through the Postmaster General's office. However, the chief inspector at the time thought it'd be a great, neat idea to have this entity at national headquarters that would interface between the national headquarters and all the other national agencies assigned to Washington, of which I had the esteemed pleasure of being a part of. Right as I was being assigned, there was the incident in Edmond, Oklahoma, and what we discovered was how ill-prepared we were to deal with that situation, how ill-prepared we were to understand what our responsibilities were before the fact. The postal inspectors that were involved in doing the investigation, I tip my hat off to them because they were professional expert and they did all the things that they were supposed to do, and they received the acclaim of the U.S. Attorney's offices for the effectiveness and the professionalism of the work. And what ensued after that major event was a collaborative effort at the Secretary Califano level in government that mandated that the Postal Service take a look at how it was doing its business. See, this is where the cost factor comes in at. When you're mandated to bring about change, either through the reengineering of your workplaces or the changes of your policies or the review of how you do things, that is where the real cost factor comes in at. That when you review in retrospect, a minimal investment, as I said earlier, could have worked with you up until you were satisfied that that you achieve your goals and objectives. So the Postal Service became the pioneer as a result of this scrutiny, this microscopic look at how things were. And it became the footprint, if you would, and the blueprint for how the rest of the country began looking at workplace violence. Yes, following Edmond, there were other incidents around the country. But I think the Postal Service, and I'm here as a former postal inspector and former employee to say to you, there were huge lapses in leadership. It was an organization that led people in a very negative and caustic way. Do it my way or the highway. It's sort of like if you don't like the way I'm doing things, hit the door and don't let the doorknob hit you where the good Lord, splits you, that old saying, and I apologize if I offend anybody. But the truth of the matter is the Postal Service has some huge problems, and I was glad to be a part of that metamorphosis. I was glad to be a part of that change that resulted in the serious introspection of how we as an organization conduct the business. And Edmond, Oklahoma allowed us to take a look at how we move forward, how aware we needed to be with the internal piece and the external piece. It became an aggressive part of the postal inspector's toolkit. We then were responsible for going out and talking to local post offices about the prevention value, about how to manage your behaviors, about how to be a better listener, how to be a better communicator, how to understand the issues from the employee's perspective. We all know we're all busy. You know, I didn't need an assignment in New York where I had Long Island and Queens, but you know what? It was an endearing experience that caused me to have greater respect for the people element that I had not ever gained an appreciation for as a law enforcement officer. And so Oklahoma for the Postal Service was an entirely new exposure that allowed it to look, and to this very day, they continue to enhance, to improve, to reevaluate, to assess, and continue to manage that piece. And you've never heard any incidents since the incidents going back to the late 90s. They've done a great job. So organizations shouldn't wait for that day, as I mentioned to one of my clients in New Jersey. You shouldn't wait for that day of the event to say, humana, 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 what do we do now?
Well, and that's, yeah, and that's, and again, it's one of those, it's just one of those interesting things that you really see people heightened awareness for a little while. It's just that desensitizing, which mm-hmm. is really unfortunate. I mean, it's hard to, I don't know, I'm not, as you probably are very heightened aware because that's what you do, but I think, like, for myself, you kind of forget about it, you get desensitized. I'm a little more aware because I've just been have been on the security side a little bit, so it's kind of just enough that it's ingrained. So pay attention to those things a little more. But I think more and more when you caught up with doing business and people in and out of offices, and you know, we got to hire 20 people, we got to do all these benefits. You get really distracted on some of the more important things, and so and under resourced and. So HR just has to make it a priority. So I think that's a good message. So, Felix, we've got about 3 minutes left, so I want to make sure and ask you how social media plays into your as you look at your workplace kind of security and awareness. Where do you deal with that, and how do you talk about that as you embrace helping folks?
Excellent, excellent. And I'll answer by saying this. In response to Boston, I believe that how you train and prepare a workplace to respond to a threat of danger is the same way a person is going to respond in a public setting. So move forward to social media. I can't talk from the legal perspective because I don't want to go into that issue, but I can tell you that if an employee is unhappy, everything that employee feels is going to be known through social media. I picked up at least 15 clients that were bullies of workplace violence through social media, that were victims of workplace situations through social media because of the insensitivity and the reluctancy on the part of their management to address their issue, and they went outside. And it shouldn't happen that way. And you're not the experts. Mr. HR, Ms. HR, Mr. Security, you're not the experts in this stuff. Don't be afraid of going out and reaching out to a trusted advisor to be on your call list of important people that you're going to call when you have a situation that requires an outside view. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be reluctant to ask employees once a year, how you doing? Here's a survey. Answer these questions anonymously or for attribution, but give me the results. Bring in someone to do a comprehensive vulnerability assessment of your workplaces. A client in New Jersey wanted a consulting service from me. When I sat down with them and explained to them what they really should be doing, it changed their request, and they were appreciative of bringing someone in that had a greater global perspective and the value of understanding that we're all in this thing together is so critically important. It really is from the top down. If the CEO knows what's important for him or her, they'll dedicate the resources. But you got to let him or her know how this stuff affects his workplace.
Well, that's excellent. I want to make sure that everybody figures out where to find. Probably the biggest thing is it's everybody's responsibility is definitely the message that I hear from that and totally agree. You can't point to HR. You can't point to one person. It's everybody's responsibility.
No.
All the time. So where can folks connect with you? Where can folks follow you and get a hold of you?
First of all, I'm very active on Twitter. I love sharing my tips, my thoughtful questions and observations. So I'm at Twitter at Felix Nader. I'm on LinkedIn, Felix Nader. Website, naderassociates.com. And you could reach me through my 1-800 number, 1-877. 825-8101. And any kind of conversations that we have are strictly confidential, unless you give me permission after the fact to go public and sharing the relationship that we had. Whatever we discuss is always confidential. I got to say, managing your potential workplaces that could result in hostilities is a responsibility that requires a comprehensive view and a collaborative view in order for it to be effective. It can't be one person's responsibility. It has to be an integrated, collaborative effort, and we can all share in this by understanding that if you push it down to the lowest level, supervisor and employee, you got the communication piece working a lot better, and you engender trust and confidence in the desires of you to provide a safe and secure workplace.
Excellent. Felix, thanks so much for we're definitely out of time, and but thanks for coming on and sharing lunch with us. Great information. Really enjoyed the conversation today. And listeners, family of listeners, show Felix some love and follow him on Twitter. So we got to roll. We're a little long on time. So see everybody tomorrow. It might seem crazy what I'm about to